Good afternoon, and it's time for Noon Edition here on WFIU. I'm Adam Ragusea, sitting in for Bob Zaltzberg and Mary Catherine Carmichael. Bob is off somewhere in newspaper land, and Mary Catherine is actually up in Kokomo. So to our Kokomo listeners, if you see Mary Catherine driving around, say hi for us. I'm here with Gretchen Clearwater, who is running for the Democratic nomination to seek the 9th District Congressional seat. Gretchen, thank you for braving the weather out there to be with us.
Thank you, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here.
We, as always, certainly invite audience participation. We hope to get plenty of phone calls and emails today. The phone numbers to call are toll-free in the Bloomington area, 855-0811, or toll-free anywhere else, 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to noon@indiana.edu. Okay, Gretchen, who are you and where did you come from?
I'm Gretchen Clearwater, and I'm from Bloomington. I've lived here ever since I came to go to undergraduate school in 1971. I have lived I grew up in West Lafayette and part of my high school life. Mm-hmm. And then when I was younger, I lived in Nigeria. My parents were missionaries there. So I kind of consider myself to be from all over, from many places.
We should go ahead and mention at the top of the program that WFIU had initially invited both yourself and Congressman Barron Hill to come on the program for a debate, and we had proposed the Easter congressional recess is a good time to do that when he would be back in the district. And the congressman declined that invitation, and so what we decided to do was to go ahead and offer you the spot to come on the program in a solo appearance. And likewise, we've extended the same invitation to the congressman, and we're hoping to at some point get him in here. And we should say that he has been kind enough to come in and be on the program a couple of times before. But so that, I think, lets our audience know what the background of this conversation is. And so we're going to talk about you, and we're going to talk about the issues of your campaign and why you're running and anything else that's going on in the 9th District or anything else that any of our listeners would like to talk about. Gretchen, what are the primary components of your campaign platform?
Well, there are three. One of them is I think we need to safeguard our civil liberties. I think this administration has just decimated our civil liberties by, allowing wiretapping and that sort of thing. Our Constitution has been just torn to shreds. The second thing that I think that we have to safeguard the Bill of Rights, the things that the very foundation of this country, I think, is we're in jeopardy of losing it. The second aspect of my campaign is about the war. I ran in 2006 the thing that got me to run in the first place was when Abu Ghraib happened. Mm-hmm. I was just so astonished that my government would have any part in what had happened in that prison. And it made me rise up and think that as an average citizen, I can do something about it. And not only can I do something, that I had to do something about it. So –
well, let's talk about that run in 2006. You got a not insignificant portion of the primary vote. How much did you earn?
We got 17%. And it was – what's astonishing about that vote was that we only raised about $20,000. And so I was very surprised. I didn't expect to get near that amount of money nor near that number of votes. But what I learned was that people were upset and frustrated with Congress in general, and they kind of reflected how I felt.
Well, let me ask you, why try to challenge Congressman Hill for the Democratic nomination? Why not make an independent run? Or I've looked at your platform. It seems quite consistent with the platform of the Green Party. Why not make a Green Party run? Why the primary?
Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm not a Green Party person, so I should rightfully run as a Democrat. And that's a simple answer. I'm not green. My platform is very, as you say, very, greenish. But I think a lot of Ninth Districters share my values.
Let's go ahead and define the Ninth District for those people in the audience who aren't geeks like me. And the Ninth District essentially is about the western three quarters of Monroe County, including the city of Bloomington, extends over into Brown County, the southern portion of Bartholomew, and it encompasses all of Columbus proper?
Not all of it.
Not all of it.
Just part of it.
Just part of it. and then just goes across a lot of rural areas that are the southeastern corner of the state and extends down to the other major population center of the district, which is the Indiana suburbs of Louisville. It's a very large and a very diverse district. How do you campaign in it?
Well, it's hard, but it's actually one of the – I love campaigning in it because it's one of the most beautiful districts of the 9th District of Indiana. And the way that we get out, we are planning all sorts of events to get out. We're going to have a touring musician band attached to a with a truck, mm-hmm. and just go around meeting people. That's what we're planning to do coming soon. And you establish friends, you go out and meet people, you attend the 9th District meetings, we're having radio ads that will go out. So that's how you go out to as many as you possibly can.
What's the size of your organization?
We have, about 15 people on our staff that do all sorts of things. Our campaign manager is Tamara DiPolito, but then we have graphics artists, people who write, people who are in charge of press. They're all volunteer excepting for the campaign manager.
And are you still working full-time as you're doing this?
I am. And that's what
makes – And you work for Indiana University?
I work for Indiana University. I'm the advisor for graduate students in the biology department. So it's a full-time job. I go from work full-time to campaign full-time at night. So they're long days and long weekends, but they're fun.
And so do you have a specific goal for this time around with the primary? Are you trying to chip away at that portion of the vote, or is it more about just raising the issues that are important to you?
My goal is to win. It's as simple as that. I think I would be a great congressperson. I think I would represent this district admirably. I shouldn't toot my own horn like that.
Well, that's what campaigning is all about.
That is. We're all Democrats. You asked the question earlier, why am I running as a Democrat? We're all Democrats, but we're not all the same kind of Democrats. And so I represent the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
And, of course, Barron Hill self-identifies as this new term, blue dog Democrat.
Right.
And one could argue that that the viability in a general election of a Democrat who doesn't identify as a blue dog Democrat or whatever else you want to call a more centrist or moderate Democrat would be in question, given that the 9th District is one of the just, less than 1% of districts across the entire United States that hasn't been gerrymandered to death. How do you appeal to the very diverse group of demographics that are encompassed in this district?
Well, first of all, I don't think you can lump all 9th districters into one category. We're all smart. We all care about the same issues. We all care about our jobs. We care about the environment. We care about our future. We care about energy issues. We care about the war. These are all issues that every single person in the 9th district cares about, and those are all issues that I address.
We're speaking with Gretchen Clearwater. She's running for the Democratic nomination for the 9th District congressional seat here in Indiana. And the phone numbers to call to join the conversation are 855-0811 or toll-free 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to noon@indiana.edu. So, Gretchen, obviously ending the war in Iraq was a big part of your campaign platform in 2006. It is part of that campaign platform again this year. I feel like 2007 was the year in which to categorize oneself as pro or anti-war became so simplistic as to be something of a non-statement. What kind of withdrawal from Iraq do you advocate?
I think that we need to start the process of withdrawing immediately. I don't think we should just overnight pull everybody out. But if we don't start the process today, it's never going to happen. And so I think it is a non-plus issue on some – you mentioned that people aren't as engaged in it. That's not really true. It's always on the back of people's minds. It's always on the back of, I spoke to a gentleman down in Paoli, Indiana, and I was telling him that a lot of people think that the 9th District doesn't care about the war. I was in a restaurant with him, and he got up out of his seat and across the room, went clear across the room, and he said, Are you kidding me? We give our sons and daughters to this war. And he was so angry at that, you know, that we would have this notion that we don't care.
But especially in light of the last 2 years, do you think that the institution of Congress or the institution of the House of Representatives for which you're running has the power to make the kind of change you're talking about?
We absolutely do have the power, and that power is a purse string. And all
so in your mind, it's been a lack of will.
It's been a lack of will, and that's one of the reasons I'm running. We sent people to Congress to end this war, and it didn't happen. You know, we can't afford to keep this war going on and on and on indefinitely. And Congress has absolute power. They could stop it today if they wanted to.
So what would you do as a freshman congressman to make that happen?
Well, obviously, I'm going to have to work with other people in Congress. I'm going to align myself with other progressives in Congress and make that voice stronger. And I think that can only help this process out. The other thing that I would like to do when I get to Congress is become much more active with the community out in the 9th District. And I want to explain to people why, for example, talk to them about the war. And I want to talk to them about our energy crisis. And I'm going to talk to them about our environmental problems. I want to become a leader and inform people about what the decisions that we have to make in Congress today. And I think that's what's lacking in Congress right now. There's not enough reaching out to people to say, you know, this is what absolutely has to be done for the future, for our future.
How do you do that when you're in Washington?
You write letters. And you send letters. Now, I know that you can use the tool of email and it reaches people who have email, but that does not reach my neighbor, Margaret, who's 81 years old, who doesn't have a computer in her home. So it is up to me as a leader in Washington to say, you know what, we have a serious problem with our energy situation. We have to resolve this. And this is what I propose that we do.
We've had a caller call in who just wanted to gently remind me that I had asked you for your primary campaign platform points, and you said that you had three, and I cut you off after two.
You did, yes.
So let's go ahead and have that third one.
Well, the third one, you know, I mentioned the war. One of the reasons that it's so important to end the war and change our foreign policy is that we are now $3 trillion in debt because of this war and rising. And because of that, we're not able to address the issues that we have locally, like job losses, like education, like the health care crisis that we have right now. And so I think that we need to reprioritize and say this is really what we care about for this 9th district, for the state of Indiana, for the country. And so that, you know, shifting our priorities is the second thing. The third is that we have to really genuinely care about future generations. And that has – and by doing so, we have to seriously change our energy solve our energy crisis and look at the environmental crisis, and because these are things that are going to impact generations to come, many, many generations.
Gretchen Clearwater is the guest here on WFIU's Noon Edition. I'm Adam Ragusa, sitting in for Bob Zaltzberg and Mary Catherine Carmichael. And the phone numbers to call to join the conversation are 855-0811. That's the local call in the Bloomington area. Anywhere else in the 9th District or anywhere else for that matter, 877-285-9348. Send an email to noon@indiana.edu. Now, Gretchen, you say that you are for universal socialized medicine.
I did not say that.
I'm sorry. Did I not say that?
I did not say that.
Apologies. Go ahead and characterize your position on this point. I'm sorry. I've got your campaign website in front of me, and
I have never ever used the word socialized.
What's the distinction in your mind?
It's a single payer. There's a distinction. So what I'm really happy about is that we now have two presidential candidates, and even on John McCain is talking about the health care crisis that we have. So Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both have universal health care plans that I think are a good start. That's a direction that we could maybe – that it's good to have this issue on the table. But I've been doing a little bit of study about the single-payer health care plan, which is not a socialized
Well, it depends on who that single payer is.
Exactly. And it could be a combination of business and government. So there's all kinds of ways that a single payer plan can be funded.
Would you be opposed to it being a socialized institution that is entirely government?
No, but you know, government. I'm not opposed to policemen. I'm not opposed to education.
We certainly do have a lot of socialized institutions
and
that we all seem to enjoy.
And those are all socialized, exactly. But I think the minute you mention the word socialized, everybody thinks you're a communist and that is another thing that a congressperson can talk about. You can say, let's really talk about why are we the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't have a health care plan for its people?
Linda from Bloomington wants to join the conversation about health insurance. Linda, are you there?
Yes, hello.
What's your comment?
Hello, Gretchen.
Hello.
I would like to first start out by saying that I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for 28 years. Years ago, I worked in the ER in ICU, CCU, CVICU, and, you know, literally, I'm not exaggerating, you know, save patients' lives with my own hands. And I'm in a situation today where I've worked in the last 5 years, I've worked in doctor's offices where I don't have health care insurance. I don't make much money. I can't afford insurance. I've checked into this. The cost is just outrageous. I have health problems, and I know, you know, if I went and had them taken care of, I'd probably be bankrupted and lose my house. And I've seen the crisis we're in the healthcare system is just incredible. You know, on the ground level as a nurse, I've seen this crisis, and not just for myself, but for many of my patients, and you know, who I empathize with. And I always say, you know, I don't have health insurance either. You know, I totally understand. Don't feel bad. I feel bad, but I know you feel bad, but don't feel like you're the only one out there. And this just impacts our whole country in, you know, in an incredible way. And, you know, I'm definitely for a single-payer health care plan like Canada or Europe. And I definitely want price limits put on the drug companies. I think that is an absolute crisis. I have to get my medicines from either Canada or now India, and I've done a lot of research on that. And I'd just like to hear, you know, more about what Gretchen thinks about this. And I think that my situation, although I feel like everyone deserves health insurance, I feel like my situation, being a registered nurse and not having access to health care, for me, after I've taken care of so many people in my life, you know, really profoundly speaks to the incredible crisis we're in. The depth of the crisis we're in this country that now I can't get health care. Thank you.
Yes, Linda, I'm very glad that you called because I know so many people who are in your same position. My own daughter is in that position. She has had to wait for weeks to get into a clinic to go to get help because she does not have insurance. When she did have insurance, she paid a third of her salary what went toward her insurance. So it is a crisis. And in Indiana, for example, over half of the bankruptcies that occur are due to health care expenses. And I think it's a shameful thing that we haven't addressed this issue. You are a nurse, doesn't have that. That is a pathetic statement. Absolutely pathetic.
And it's very humiliating.
Yes, to say the least. And you have a voice to be speaking about this now, but there are hundreds of thousands of people. 47 million Americans do not have health insurance, so you're not alone. And I think that is why I'm so happy to be talking about this plan. I'm not even wedded to a single payer. I just want some sort of plan that covers people like you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I encourage you to use the bully pulpit and educate people about
that. That's what I'm doing. I work on the campus. I work with graduate students who have to go home to their homelands to get medical care because they can't get the coverage here. So this is just not right, and it's not necessary. And I really appreciate you calling.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Linda, and best of luck. Sorry, it was a sobering phone call. We have a couple other callers on the line with other topics that they want to get to, but I want to make sure that we fully explore healthcare a little bit before we move on. And obviously, what Jefferson used to call the – Thomas Jefferson, that is, called the laboratory of the states has been at work to a certain extent on the issue of health care, and most recently in Indiana with the passage of the Healthy Indiana Plan. How would you assess that plan, and do you think that that's a step in the right direction? Do you think that maybe this could be addressed by the states?
I think it could be addressed by the states in another way. There's another person named Rob Stone who has the Hoosiers for Common Sense Health Care. He's advocating a single-payer plan for the state, and I have backed his plan. The plan that Mitch Daniels has come forward with only covers a certain portion. He's limited it to a number of people or a certain small number of people, so it's not a good start. I think that we should just shoot for the single-payer plan. I think it's ultimately the best way to go. The thing that I like about the single payer plan the most is that it makes it possible for employees to be mobile, so they can go from job to job to job, and they don't have to stay in an underpaid job or a job that is hazardous to their health, or they just want to move to another location. When they move, they take that health care insurance with them. And that is the beauty of the plan. It also takes a burden off of businesses, especially small businesses that, you know, can pay, you know, and we have to decide how we're going to pay for this. But if some of the costs can be taken off of businesses, it would be a very good thing for our economy.
Of course, like it or not, you know, the economy of the state of Indiana is enriched to a great extent by the current healthcare establishment with the presence of WellPoint and Eli Lilly. Does that at all impact your thinking on this?
No, because Eli Lilly, we are enriched by them, but they are also enriched by us. You know, they get a lot of money. These pharmaceutical companies get a lot of our tax money, and a lot of it goes to advertisements. You know, we're paying for such things like, advertising for strange diseases that none of us have ever heard of. It's a partnership business. You know, the pharmaceutical companies and the government and the people can be partners on this. But, you know, these pharmaceutical companies also limit the kinds of drugs that we get, and they determine how much we pay for them.
We've got a caller on the line who really wants to talk about Barron Hill, but I'm going to ask him just to wait a little bit longer because we have Jesse from Bloomington who wants to talk about health care. So while we're on that topic, let's go to Jesse.
Hello, Jesse. Hello.
Hi, Jesse. Are you with us? Oh, I guess we lost Jesse.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, hi, Jesse, there you are.
I was just reading an article not long ago about perks in high places. And the best deal, I don't know why the people running for office, the politicians presently and anyone, pattern after Congress. They have a Cadillac plan. They only pay a $250 deductible, covers everything. They can't be rejected for any reason, age. Most of them make $165,000 a year salary, retire $53,000. And for less than $1,000 a year, they have access to anything and all things paid. So I think it would be grand just to study what's going on in Congress and also to make employees across country responsible for medical care. So they have to have some concern about
their employees. Jesse, did you say employers across the country should be responsible for medical care?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the way it was when I worked in medicine 40 years ago. Employers, everyone, usually everyone, not everyone, but most people, I would say at that time, be back in the 50s, 60s, were covered by some type of employer's insurance.
Well, that's distinguished from what Gretchen is advocating with a single-payer system, correct?
Yes, and I think what companies are having a hard time dealing with now is a high cost of insurance for their employees. And so I think if we could come up with some sort of a relief for them, it would make them it would help. I think it would help a great deal.
Well, the thing is that socialized medicine has not been the phenomenal success that is touted because England, Canada, I think New Zealand are all having tremendous problems with their medical services. So it needs to be looked at in depth.
I agree with you, Jesse. It absolutely does have to be looked at in depth, and we should pick the best part about the Canadian system and the best parts of the English or the French systems or any other system and examine them closely and decide what we want to pick from them. That's part of the reason I'm running, because I think as Congress, you know, we have to have a vision of what we want. And before we can have the vision, we have to study it. But I don't think we can wait 20 years to study this anymore. The system that we have here is flawed. Like I said earlier, my daughter is without health insurance. She's been waiting for 3 weeks to get into a clinic, and that's too long. So, you know, I think that we immediately have to address this.
Well, they need more doctors, more nurses.
Exactly.
It has to be addressed. I mean, it's just not one thing that you can point your finger at.
Absolutely.
It's been a snowballing.
Absolutely. Sure. And the other comment that you made about Congress has a really nice little system of health insurance. Wouldn't we all like to have that?
Yeah, wouldn't we all?
Wouldn't we all?
Thanks so much
thank
for the
you.
Call, Jesse. We
well,
appreciate that.
Well, the taxpayers paying for it, too.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Who are just waiting patiently on the line, and we'd like to hope that they will continue to wait patiently. We have reached halftime in the show. We're speaking with Gretchen Clearwater, who's a Democrat running for Congress in the 9th District of Indiana, here on WFIU's Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage, using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. Indiana's Governor Mitch Daniels has proclaimed this week Severe Weather Preparedness Week in Indiana. This evening, Severe Weather Spotter Training. The National Weather Service's Dr. David Tuchek presents Storm Spotter Training. It's a chance to learn what generates severe weather, how warnings are produced, and the role of the volunteer spotter. And that takes place this evening at Wegg Miller Auditorium at Bloomington Hospital at 7 o'clock. More at WFIU.org.
And we're back. This is WFIU's Noon Edition. I'm Adam Ragusea, sitting in for Bob Zaltzberg and Mary Catherine Carmichael. And we're delighted to have in the studio with us Gretchen Clearwater, who's running for Congress as a Democrat in the 9th District of Indiana. And we've had just tons of callers waiting patiently on the line, so let's go to one. Randy from Bloomington wants to know where you disagree with Barron Hill.
Yes. My question's pretty basic. I just would like to know what positions and votes Barron Hill's taken, especially over the last 2 years, that you would disagree with, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Thank you, Randy.
Thanks for waiting, Randy.
Thank you, Randy. I'm going to start this conversation off with you, Randy. I like Barron Hill, and I respect what he has done thus far on so many levels. Where he and I differ, I think, is a sense of urgency. A bill that was recently passed about energy and raising the number of miles per gallon.
The Hill-Terry Cafe standards.
Yes, exactly right. That bill is a wonderful bill, excepting it takes place 12 to 20 years from now, and I don't think we have the time. So while it's a good start, I think this is a matter of urgency. I think that we have to do better than that. Where we differ is on the issue of the war, obviously. This was an older bill that he voted for. He voted to take us into war. That's not something I would have done had I been there. I would have voted against that. The FISA laws have been seriously jeopardized by the Protect America Act that he voted for. I would not have voted for that one either. So we differ on those things. My sense about him is that we agree on many issues, on the issues of environment and the issues of even on energy, but we have some differences there. I heard him say recently he was talking about the use of clean coal. I don't necessarily agree with him on that. I think that we need to be investing in alternative energy sources, wind and solar, instead of going back to those old failed policies that we've used in the past. So we differ, I think, on the sense of urgency about things.
Well, of course, you know, the congressman had argued publicly, or at least through his spokespeople, over the course of the summer when the House energy bill was getting hammered out, saying that, especially in contrast to the CAFE standards that had been put forth by Representative Markey of Massachusetts, I think, which were much more aggressive emission standards for automobiles. And he was simply arguing that this was what was viable and that nothing more aggressive could possibly be passed by Congress and signed by the president.
Well, I think you have to raise the expectations. You have to say, it may not be viable, but let's not pass it if it's not going to be strong enough. Hmm. I think that's the thing. I'm so tired of just settling for the viable. We have to be much more aggressive about solving these problems. And that's, you know, I think that's a lot of people talk about my campaign is not viable. You know, when are we going to get over that? I just think it's crazy.
We have a caller on the line who wants to talk about the history of folks who have represented the 9th District.
Well,
caller, are you there with us? Oh, I think we've lost the caller. But the caller's question was has a woman ever represented the 9th District?
We have never in the history of Indiana in this district had a woman or a minority person in this office.
So you'd be the first.
I would be the first.
What do you think that says about the district, if anything?
Well, it says it's time. It's time for a woman or a minority to be in that position. And I think that I think they're ready. I think the district is very excited about both candidates, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And so I think they're ready for a woman and they're ready for, a minority candidate as well.
Well, you invoked the two names. Are you behind one candidate or the other?
I am.
And that
I know I'm not supposed to be, but I am. I support Barack Obama. I love the one of my platforms is democracy. When I get to Congress, I would like to promote democracy like it's never been promoted before. I think I'm very concerned that so many Americans don't vote. You mentioned earlier before this program started that young people they don't vote. They're down in Florida. That's not. You know, it's not true. And I think that you have to get people excited. And I'm thrilled with what Barack Obama is doing is he's bringing people to the poll that don't normally get there. And that makes me very happy.
Of course, it seems that one of the substantive differences between the two candidates and their policy positions is over their unique health care plans. Are there points of Barack Obama's health care plan that are more attractive to you?
Yes.
And those are?
And Barack Obama's plan – the problem with both of their plans is that they rely on health insurance companies to solve these problems. From what I've studied, I attended a lecture with Rob Stone for the Hoosiers for Common Sense Healthcare. With Obama's plan, he says that if your children have to be covered but not necessarily you, so you have the option of buying into this insurance. Hillary says, you've got to buy it no matter what. And it's you buying the insurance, not the government buying the insurance. And what that does is, who does that make richer? It makes the insurance companies richer. And it's not, it's again benefiting the wrong people.
So do you think that the entire private health insurance infrastructure needs to be torn down and the slate wiped clean?
I don't think it has to be torn down, but I think it has to be regulated somehow. And it has to go... yes. I'm going to change. I think the health insurance plan is not working. It determines which doctor you go to. It determines the kind of medications you get. It determines the kind of surgeries you get. They, instead of the doctors determining that, they are the ones determining that. So some modification, obviously you've got to have some sort of coverage somehow for catastrophic bad things that happen. But, you know, I think some modification has to happen.
855-0811 is the local call in the Bloomington area. Toll-free anywhere else, 877-285-9348, or an email to noon@indiana.edu. We'd love to hear from some of the other cities in the 9th District. If you're calling from Columbus or from Seymour or what other – who else can we name drop?
New Albany, Jeffersonville.
French Lick West Baden?
French Lick West Baden, yeah.
To speak with Gretchen Clearwater, who's running for Congress as a Democrat in the 9th District. Here's an email from Melody in Bloomington. She says, my main concern at this time is our out-of-control dependence on foreign oil. What will you do to convince our government and citizens to break our habits which create our need? And need is in quotation marks. Oil seems to be the root of all evil, and our current administration seems to feed off this.
Well, that's a large topic, but I was talking to somebody recently about the situation in Iraq and in Afghanistan and just in general about our foreign policy in other countries, how we tend to get involved in countries and with leaders who are not necessarily the nicest people in the world. And I was trying to figure out why we do that. And it has everything to do with dependence on energy. On oil coming from these countries. That's why we become friends with Saddam Hussein. He's got oil. And so I think the best way to address our crisis is to address it, to address the alternative, using to invest in alternative energy sources. And I wanted to hear more of Melody's question because I didn't quite
– Oh, that was – I'm sorry. Yeah. Give me – Do you mean to reread it or that's
just,
all there was?
Yeah. I mean, basically, we have a crisis. We need to fix it. And until we fix it, we're always going to be in bed with bad guys like Saddam Hussein.
How do you feel about nuclear power?
I am opposed to nuclear power. I don't think we have a mechanism of getting rid of the waste. It needs to be studied more. If someone can prove to me that we have a way to dispose of these very, very toxic waste that is going to sit around for generations and generations and generations – we need not to touch that form of energy.
Now, I hate to bring it back to this, but there, of course, there are 435 voting members of the House of Representatives, just one house of the Congress, which is just one of the three branches of federal government. How do you, as a freshman member of that institution, affect the kind of age change on these fundamental, incredibly fundamental issues that we're talking about?
You know, you are talking about a very diverse body of people in Washington, D.C. But I don't work for them. I work for the 9th District. So if there is an issue that they are not going to agree with me on, I'm going to take it to the 9th District and I'm going to have the 9th District take it back to them. That's how it has to work. I think, you know, someone once told me that I was a dangerous candidate, that the Democratic Party doesn't like me running. And I asked them why, and they said, because when you get to Congress, Gretchen, you're not going to vote the way Nancy Pelosi tells you to vote. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I'm an independent thinker, and I will vote the way I feel. And if my bill doesn't pass, it doesn't pass. If I don't get reelected, I don't get reelected. But at least I have done what is right for the people of this district.
Obviously, we're looking forward to the primary election at this point, which is May 6th, where you will face incoming Congressman Hill. And let's go ahead and look past that a little bit. How do you run against Mike Sodrill if you win the primary?
I run against Mike Sodrill the same way I'm running against Barron Hill. I persevere and I work hard. I plan to take some time off of work so that I can actually have more time to get out into the district. I think Mike Sodrill runs against himself. You know, he's got his good buddy in Washington, D.C. is George Bush. He has backed every single thing that George Bush has proposed. How do you ask, you know, he's responsible in part for the job loss from NAFTA and CAFTA. He voted for the free trade agreements. So I don't have to run against him. He runs against himself. And I think people are awfully, awfully tired about what's going on in Washington, D.C.
One of the components of your platform has been, especially this year, voter enfranchisement. Where do you feel that voters have been getting disenfranchised?
After the 2000 election, of course, we know what happened in Florida. In 2004, I did some studying about what happened in Ohio. The disenfranchisement occurred in areas where really dense populations had too few voting machines, and they couldn't possibly get to the poll to vote because there just were not enough machines. Kenneth Blackwell from Ohio was turning away registration forms that people had turned in because they weren't on the right card stock paper. So anybody who turned in a piece of paper that was photocopied onto a regular piece of paper didn't have their vote count. In some of the areas in Ohio, the precincts were so poorly designed. They were in one gymnasium. One side was precinct one and the other side was precinct two. People stood in line for hours and hours to get there to vote, only to be told in that they were in the wrong line. And instead of letting them just switch over right next door, right beside each other, they made them go back and stand in line hours and hours and hours.
This plays into things that are happening in Indiana right now. And let me ask what you feel about three distinct proposals, and those are vote centers, vote by mail, and Indiana's voter ID law.
And I want to also talk about the voting machines that we use here in Monroe
Sure.
County. They are electronic voting machines. When you put your vote on that machine, there is no way that you can tally that vote up again. There is no record of it. So I understand that there are efforts being made now to get rid of those electronic voting machines because they are not accurate, or if they are accurate, there's no way of proving they're accurate. I think voting centers are a pretty good idea, provided that the center is accessible and people can get to it. And if it's too far away, it might not work. Voting by mail, I think, is a great idea. They use that out in, I think it's Oregon or Washington, one of those two states.
Oregon.
And I think it's Oregon. And I think it's I think it's great. You know, why not be able to just put your ballot in the mail? I think it's a very, very good idea. I'd be a little bit nervous about it getting lost in the mail. I'd probably hand deliver it. But I think it's anything that we can do to make voting easier, I think, is a good thing.
We have a flood of emails and only about 10 more minutes left in the show, so let's go ahead and get to them. Here's an email from Chuck. It says, today on the show, we're hearing a lot of complaints about the current health care situation. How do you propose to pay for universal health care?
I think that we're going to have to make a decision as a nation that we're going to pay for it. And it's going to have to come out, I think, ultimately, in the end. I don't like the health care paying through the insurance kind of thing. So I think ultimately what I would like to see is a proposal where a portion of our money that we earn is taken out and goes into the single-payer plan.
Here's an email from Colin. It says, I'm a lifelong Bloomington resident, and I wondered what Ms. Clearwater's position was on the new I-69 highway, and if she is for it, how can she reconcile that position with her greener ideals as a Democrat?
I'm against I-69. I think that this is an example of a proposal that is outdated and antiquated, and instead of building highways, we ought to be building trains, high-speed rail trains. That's where the money should go. We don't need yet another highway for yet more cars, for yet more pollution. And then now we're having, you know, the prices of gas go up. It's short-sighted. You know, talk about the future. There's our chance to really make a change, to put Indiana on the map.
But you're running for a federal office, so let's say that you're in the House of Representatives. Would you therefore be disinclined from voting in favor of any federal highway appropriations?
I think what I would like to see is the repair of existing highways and existing bridges. I don't think that we should be building more highways.
Here's a general question from Christy. It says, what would you do to reduce poverty?
Well, to reduce poverty, I think we need to do something about education. I think that is what causes poverty is people just aren't getting a proper education. And so I think we need to get rid of the Leave No Child Behind Act. Leave Every Child Behind Act is what it could be also called. I think that our schools are still not good. We still have too many kids in the classroom. We still have too few teachers. And I think education is the key to solving our poverty problems. And also, I think, is recognizing that we do have poverty in this country. I think until we start recognizing the high level of joblessness or homelessness, it's a big problem. I think we have to recognize it and we have to care about it.
Let's talk about the state. I got you to tell me which horse you were backing in the presidential race, at least the Democratic primary for the presidential race. What about the Democratic primary for the gubernatorial race? Do you have a dog in that fight?
I don't have a dog in that fight. I'm disappointed by Joe Long Thompson's stance on I-69. I'm not thrilled with her stance on the coal industry or coal business, the Edwardsport. But I find her to be a very intelligent individual, and I think I don't really have a strong horse in that.
Well, feelings on Jim Schellinger?
I've had one opportunity to meet him, and no. I haven't really had a...
The answer can be no on the show sometimes. That's
yeah,
okay.
I don't have a horse, I do wish either candidate would take a stronger stance on environment and on energy issues. I do wish that. It's time to do that.
But I guess I wonder if Indiana, if the general populace is in agreement with you on this. And we have seen some interesting political movement in Indiana in the recent years with three congressional seats switching to Democratic control in 2006. What direction do you think that Hoosiers are moving ideologically?
I think Hoosiers are seeking some – I don't know if it's a direction, but from my sense is from talking to people is that Hoosiers are some of the most commonsensical people. They don't mess around.
With a name like Hoosiers.
Yeah. I think what they recognize is it's not about politics. It's not about directions. It's about jobs. You know, they're losing jobs out here. And so I think the direction that they would like to see us go is get something done in Congress, for heaven's sakes. And so I think that's the direction that they want to go in.
We have just 5 minutes or so left in the program here. We're speaking with Gretchen Clearwater here on WFIU's Noon Edition. She's running as a Democrat for Congress in the 9th District of Indiana. We do have time for another phone call if anyone would like to chime in, 855-0811 or toll-free 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to noon@indiana.edu. And here's a question from someone who just wants to know how to get in touch with you in the future, your campaign website and your phone number.
That's a good question. My name is Gretchen Clearwater, and I'm running for Congress in the 9th District. My website is www.clearwaterforcongress.com. You can email me at gretchen@clearwaterforcongress.com. We also have a forum on Bloomington Online that you can ask me any kind of questions you want. That's it.
And I'm on that website right now, Clearwater for Congress, and you have a feature on the left-hand side of the page which is called Legislation Watch. And here you're talking about how a particular piece of legislation you'd like to highlight is H.R. 1590, which is the Safe Climate Act of 07.
Right.
What is that act?
That act is put out by Henry Waxman, and it also is not as strong as I would like it to be, but it says that by a certain time we have to curb the greenhouse gases, and by a certain time we have to raise the CAFE standards. By a certain time, we have to revert. We have to go switch from using the traditional mechanisms of energy to alternative. So, but it sets a deadline and a timeline, and it's a pretty strict legislation.
Anything else you'd like to highlight that you are hoping to vote for?
I would like to vote. excuse me. For civil liberties, I would like to undo some of the legislation that has gone through Congress on taking away our rights.
So is it safe to say the most recent Protect America Act would not have gotten your vote?
It would not have. I would like to do see that we do something about Guantanamo Bay. I think that place needs to be shut down. So some of that kind of legislation I would like to latch on to. And I want to do something about the Free Trade Acts, the CAFTA, NAFTA, and all of these bills that have been pushed.
We should have talked about that earlier in the program because this is obviously very important here in a manufacturing-heavy state like Indiana.
Absolutely.
Do you think that the Free Trade Acts have been themselves responsible for the decline in manufacturing jobs in the state of Indiana?
I think in large part they have been because they've made it they made it so much easier for people to take their businesses overseas and to hire people who don't make very much money with no regulations whatsoever. And so it's just this free trade back and forth, and the American worker gets really knocked out.
So what do you propose doing? Obviously, some folks have just said keep NAFTA and CAFTA, but better enforce trade regulations that are already on the books. Or would you just look at repealing those agreements?
I think obviously one would like to just repeal them or not repeal them, but it would like to enforce them. But my problem with that is who's doing the enforcing? You know, it depends on which president gets in and who's going to be doing the enforcing and how strictly they're going to be enforcing them. So I think maybe repealing them might be the best way to go and then start from ground zero. I'm willing to look at both sides, but I think repealing is probably the more useful thing to do.
Well, just in our last 90 seconds or so, walk me through your approach to the campaign leading up to May 6th.
My approach? Mm-hmm. My approach is to get out as to see and meet as many people as I possibly can.
Where are you going
to
be?
I am heading down to Floyd County pretty soon. There they have the chicken, fish fry dinners that I will be attending. I'll be eating lots and lots and lots of good food. And we're going to have some radio ads shortly. I've got every weekend scheduled from here until May 6th. So it's kind of it's a blast. I tell you, it's and knocking on doors. One of my favorite things to do is to meet people and knock on their doors, and I discover that they're just amazingly nice people out there.
And of course, what's on the back of every Hoosier's mind right now is the fact that the Indiana primary, at least in the presidential side, at least on the Democratic side, could actually be meaningful for the first time in a couple of decades here. Are you expecting some record turnout?
I am so excited that we actually may have an impact on this presidential election. And I think we will have record turnout, and that makes me extremely happy.
Well, we look forward to seeing what happens. Gretchen Clearwater, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure.
This has been Noon Edition here on WFIU. I'm Adam Ragusa. I was sitting in for Bob Zaltzberg and Mary Catherine Carmichael. We expect them both to be back next week when we're going to be talking to the directors of two animal shelters here in the WFIU listening area, from the Bloomington Animal Shelter and also from the Columbus Animal Shelter. We'll be talking about issues related there, too. For producer Colin Bishop and engineer Mike Paskesh, thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.